Who struggles more with daylight saving time? West River South Dakotans or their neighbors to the east? You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Well, daylight saving time begins Sunday morning. Before we spring ahead, it is worth considering perhaps the science behind the time change. I talked with science journalist Lynn Peoples to learn about circadian science. Peoples wrote the book, The Inner Clock. And she says humans don't just have one inner clock. Our bodies host a symphony of synchronicities.
Nearly every cell of the human body has a molecular, invisible clock. I mean, it's metaphorical, of course. But so essentially, because we have trillions of cells, we've got trillions of these little clocks ticking throughout our bodies, and they are coordinating our bodies to be doing the right things at the right times. So they're regulating our metabolism. They're regulating our immune system. They're, you know, helping our hormones rise and fall at the right times of day, our mood, our cognition. All these things are reliant on our circadian clocks to keep a rhythm that is optimal for the 24-hour Earth day. However, again, circadian, that circa and circadian, that means about or around a day. So we all have these inner clocks, we're born with them, but they don't all tick the same. For some people, clocks tick a little shorter than 24 hours a day. Some tick a little longer. On average, we tick a little longer. Those that go really long are night owls. Maybe we'll get to that. But that variability, we really need to be recalibrated every day by cues to keep in sync with the Earth and then keep our body in sync with itself and doing all these right things at the right times. So that's where we'll get to, I'm sure, but that's where the cue of the sun being the primary mechanism by which our clocks get kind of reined back into that 24-hour time.
And you wanted to know, not only as a science journalist, you know, to interview and talk to the scientists so you could write this book and do your work, but you also wanted to figure out your own inner clock. And you did a fairly, you know, I think most people would say in a, I don't know, is extreme the right word? You were you were dedicated to the experiment. Let's put it that way.
That's fair. I'd say.
Tell us what you did in the bunker.
Yeah. So totally normal. I decided to spend 10 days underground with no clocks, no daylight, no other people, and just let my inner clocks run wild, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I got a bunch of devices to measure rhythms of my body. And I measured things like my heart rate and my blood glucose and my temperature and I tracked sleep and a bunch of things just to see what would happen when my clocks were left to their own devices without anything to rein them back in. Yeah. And sure enough, I went into this knowing that I may not feel great, but my inner clocks drifted. So I think it was about 8 days in, I completely flipped. So my morning was about the time everybody above ground were going to sleep. Yeah. And what's more is my, and I could tell from the data that my rhythms flattened. So essentially my body lost track of day and night. It lost track of time. And that translated to, I mean, my mood was low. My coordination was poor. I was trying to teach myself to juggle in the bunker as you do. And that would get worse over the course of the time. And my hunger, rhythm, sleep, everything was just off. You know, it was essentially a case of extreme jet lag.
Yeah. But I think a lot of people can resonate with that. Like you drop your phone or you miss an appointment or you realize that something's a little bit off. And we should pay attention to those signs. Is our body sending us signs that it's off and that we need to do some kind of recalibration?
Absolutely. And this is a really key point that you're hinting at here, is that these rhythms are invisible, right? This is something going on behind the scenes and is subtle for the most part, you know, unless you spend 10 days underground. But it's subtle. We might not connect the dots that what's happening, our mood, or, you know, maybe our are being prone to catching that cold that's coming around. It might not be obvious that that's connected to circadian disruption.
The circadian science is not something I knew that existed, nor did I realize that it was like Nobel Prize winning work, and new data points are coming in all the time. All that I'm learning from your book. And I'm wondering how we learned during the pandemic about how we function, because it was a great reset, like globally, of what time we went to work, how we got our food, what time we slept. What are some of the key lessons that we learned in 2020 and beyond that are adding to this body of science?
Yeah, it was really an interesting social experiment, as you say. So for a lot of people during the pandemic, we were finally free to set our own hours. A lot of workplaces, well, most maybe, allowed people to work from home. Schools, a lot of them were done remotely. So kids that were having to get up at 6:30 or something in the morning to catch a bus to go to school when their internal clocks are actually drifting later, which happens during adolescence, they were all of a sudden able to get that extra hour of sleep or 2 hours of sleep. At the same time, a lot of people were actually able to get outside more. You know, there are a lot of people out walking during the day because they had that freedom. Of course, there's a caveat here that people also lost that rhythm of getting up in the morning and maybe commuting to work in the daylight. So that is one thing. But on the whole, I think the study suggests that people got more in tune with their circadian rhythms. They were able to just kind of function when their bodies wanted to function best. And I think that pays off, as I've learned from researchers, for both that person and for the workplaces and for, you know, for students, for performance at school. So it's sort of a win-win when you just let people live according to their biology.
Yeah. Which makes a case for flexibility in work and school and start times, and because all these people are we're all slightly different.
Absolutely. And it's a fair argument that a lot of the social hours that we live by are biased towards early birds.
Okay. So let's talk about daylight saving time, because when we make the shift, that's not something that we are choosing to do here in South Dakota. That happens and the clock changes and everybody's a little bit wonky. What's happening when we just arbitrarily change our watches, but it's also in tune with the beginning of spring? Help put this into context for us so we figure out what we're going through right now.
there's a lot going on right now. Yeah, especially at our higher latitudes, our day length overall is stretching pretty rapidly right now. Mm-hmm. So our bodies are already just confused. Like, you know, when's the sun rising? When's it setting? And then at the same time, we spend our time indoors. We may not always catch those cues. But yeah, when we spring forward, what we're doing is we're stealing an hour of light from the morning and tacking it on to the end of the day. And so we're changing our alignment with the sun. And it's going against our biology, our circadian rhythms. Again, we evolved at the equator with 12 hours of light and solar noon when we finally, you know, started telling time with a clock on the wall. Noon was when the sun was at its highest peak. Mm. Now we're playing with that light. You know, we're shifting it from the morning to the evening. And the science says, and it's pretty much a consensus across every sleep and circadian scientist I talked to for the book, that we need that morning light to reset our clocks every day to, again, sync us back up with the sun. It's that morning light that's super critical. Mm. And light at night does the opposite. So light in the morning is helping us, telling our body it's morning, it's time to be alert, it's time to get going and be productive today. And it's also kind of starting the clock, right? So that when the evening comes, our body starts preparing to wind down and go to bed at a reasonable hour, or, you know, quote unquote, earlier than it would have been if it didn't get that morning light. And then light at night is delaying that bedtime routine for our for our bodies. It's delaying the onset of melatonin, which is kind of the driver, the hormone that tells the body to start doing those things. So if we shift that light from the morning to the night, we are in effect going to push our rhythms later. And then when we have early school start times, when we have jobs that require us to get to work at 8 o'clock, even 9 o'clock in the morning and force us up early, that can translate to lost sleep, as well as circadian misalignment, especially if on the weekends we're trying to sleep in and catch up on that lost sleep. That really creates a whiplash and constant jet lag for our bodies.
This can have short-term consequences, an increase in heart attacks, I learned in your book, accidents, which I think we, you know, kind of all know to be careful about those accidents. Long-term consequences, not about daylight saving time, but like if your circadian rhythm is off and, you know, messed up or out of calibration, that can also affect your health long-term, right?
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, like you said, the acute risk, the few days after the spring time change, there's very slightly elevated risks of heart attack, accidents. Some of the new studies are a little more iffy on that.
Okay.
But I think overall, that's still fair to say. And then, yeah, long-term, whether it's because daylight saving time has thrown us off a little bit, or because of a whole lot of other things that we do in modern society that disrupts our clock, including being indoors 90% of the time under artificial light, that could end up creating a lot of long-term consequences that we, again, may not connect to that disruption. So this can be potentially increased risks of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, depression. There's some interesting studies coming out linking circadian disruption with neurodegeneration, dementia, Alzheimer's. There's sort of it sounds like the science is putting it both ways, that Alzheimer's disease creates circadian disruption, but now we think that circadian disruption might actually help drive the disease as well. So there's more and more science coming out all the time linking circadian disruption with a host of physiological and psychological problems.
When we adjust through the time change, are there ways that we can recalibrate? Or if we just, you know, you have a new baby or you take a trip, you know, when you know your rhythm is off or it's going to be off, what are some of the things we can do to survive it?
Yeah, so we've got short time before the clocks change. My advice would be before a trip too, for a few days before that time change or before you take that flight, start slowly adjusting to that new time. So for the hour springing forward, maybe go to bed 15 minutes early for the four nights ahead of time. That way your body isn't quite as shocked by the abrupt change. And then while you're doing that, and especially after the change, just it's all the more important to seek that morning light. Even if it's cloudy outside, I can guarantee you 99% of the time, when you go outside, the light is going to be brighter than what you find indoors. And that bright light is going to signal the body better that it is indeed daytime and it's time to start the new clock, right? So it'd be easier to fall asleep the following night. So get that morning light and then limit your light at night for the same reasons as we talked about. And then to that point about what scientists call social jet lag, where you are sleeping in on the weekends or your off days to kind of account for the sleep loss during the week and you're shifting your sleep times all the time. There's interesting new data suggesting that the time you go to bed, keeping that consistent, your wake times and your bedtimes, that may be as or more important than how long you sleep. So it's really important to try to keep consistent about when you go to bed and when you wake up. And especially at the time change, that can really help you adapt faster.
Yeah. What about those screens? How do we manage them in our lives? Because they're in our lives.
They are in our lives. They're in my life. You know, it's a problem. I wouldn't say it's the biggest problem, but it's, you know, it depends. So there are things you can do, like, well, obviously the best would be to not use your screen maybe a couple hours before bed. Not necessarily practical, but taking advantage of those apps now that will suck out the blue light from your screen, kind of give it more of an orange glow. dim your screen, even more important. That's going to create less of that circadian disrupting blue light that comes into your eyes and tells your circadian clock that it's daytime when it's actually nighttime. You can do that. Even more important is to think about your whole environment. So those overhead lights in your home, especially if they're those bright white LEDs, turn them off at night if you can. Stick to table lamps. Try to use a warmer hue of a light, more like the incandescent bulbs we used to have, or if you still have them, even better. I have little electric candles that I set around my apartment at night to create kind of a cozy feel, and I think it helps my body again realize that it's nighttime. Yeah. A little more like our ancestors used to do, you know, sitting around the fire or with their candles at home.
So we have two time zones in South Dakota, east of the river and west of the river. And you have some interesting research on time zones and how they impact people. From the east side, far east side of a time zone to the far west side of the state, we're all dealing with different things. How so? And be very careful not to say that one is better than the other. I'm just going to tip you off.
The east versus west.
Yes, you don't want to get involved in that. I'm not setting you up. But we're under different forces of nature.
Right. Well, the way I think about it in this context is when you go from the east side of a time zone to the west, the sun is rising later. And there's been studies now that show that as you go from the east side to the west side, rates of cancer, suicide, car accidents actually slightly increase. And the amount of sleep that people get on average decreases. So that you can think of when we're talking about the daylight saving time debate, people suggesting that we go permanent daylight saving time. That's essentially moving everybody over to the west side of a time zone. We're losing that hour of morning light. And so this is why scientists have tried to use these kind of studies to approximate what the impact would be, because it's complicated. There's a lot of things going on here, right? And the impact for one state of permanent daylight saving time or one side of a state is going to be different than the other. Your latitude is going to have a big impact. Sure. British Columbia just decided a few days ago to go permanent daylight saving time. And what that means for Vancouver is that for about 5 weeks every winter, their sun is not going to rise until after 9 a.m. And I have to wonder what people are going to really think about that when they have to experience it and live it. Because it's really easy to say, sure, we want more light later in the day. We all do. But what does that actually translate to in the winter when our days are just short? There's nothing that we can do to lengthen the extent of daylight that we have. That's just what nature gives us.
Yeah. But permanent standard time, physicians are for.
Yeah.
But not that permanent savings time.
Right, exactly. I mean, this is there's no real easy answer. Flip-flopping, not great. When you're at these high latitudes, though, we're working with so little daylight. The best of all the imperfect options, according to scientists, is permanent standard time, because it does keep more of the light early in the day, which is better for our rhythms.
One more question before I let you go, and that's, we've had here in South Dakota an incredibly mild winter, and I was looking in your book at some of the research about just the wild creatures and how climate change is messing with their circadian rhythms, which can have pretty extreme impacts to them. What are you watching in the science as the climates change and climate reporters report on that, science study it? What's something interesting that you've noticed happening?
Yeah, well, I think I'm really keyed in on is light pollution and its relationship with our circadian rhythms, both for humans and for wildlife, as you talk about. And that also indirectly can have impacts on climate. But yeah, we're throwing all these photons into the sky. And it's not just our bodies that get confused, but we have wildlife that are out there in that environment all the time, and they're getting these cues, these faulty cues at night that it's daytime, which is throwing off their rhythms, which is affecting their migration patterns It's affecting their ability to reproduce, to forage, to hunt. You know, predator-prey relationships are getting thrown off. It's also affecting plants. So, you know, there's been studies looking at, you know, trees and other plants and how, whether they're in the shadows or in, you know, under a street light, how they grow differently. It also is extending pollen season, with light at night shown to extend the period of time in which we're suffering allergies. So there's a lot of implications that I don't think are necessarily obvious until you start, reading the science. And it's a little disturbing, but that's one thing that could be pretty easily corrected if we all kind of got on board with turning the lights off at night and opting for warmer, dimmer lights that are less blue, intense, and really throwing everybody's clocks out of whack.
Yeah. Lynn Peoples is a science journalist. Her book is called The Inner Clock, Living in Sync with Our Circadian Rhythms. Daylight saving time begins Sunday at 2 a.m. Get ready to spring ahead, South Dakota. That's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.